92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got a great but short show for you today. We are only 30 minutes this week because, of course, the pregame for the FSU football game is going to be starting here at 4:30 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. So if you're a football fan, you just got to pay, just got to deal with 30 minutes of us yammering before you can hear all the sports ball talk you could possibly want. But, you know, that's okay because we're going to spend that time wisely. We're going to bring you up to date with everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. My co-host Jeremy Branch is with me on the line. Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited every time that October hits, so I want to wish a very special Halloween season to all of our listeners.
Yeah, you know, it's that special time of the year. You know, Tim Curry has turned into Frankenfurter again. We all woke up Billy Joe. what other Halloween October memes can we throw out there real quick?
Oh geez, those were some good ones. I don't even know if I have any off the top of my head.
Those are the two big ones you see everybody posting, like September 30th. You know, it's the wake me up when September ends joke with the Green Day song, and they always put the it's always the Tim Curry and Clue where he's the butler and he's very, you know, staid and uptight, and I forget the name of that character. Is it Wordsworth?
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Yeah. I remember all the other characters because they're all the characters from the board game. But, like, he was invented for the movie, and I can never remember the character's name. It's Tim Curry. You know, it's everything.
Yeah, great movie.
Everything Tim Curry's in, he's Tim Curry. You know, legend, uh-huh. Legend from Darkness. It's Tim Curry. You know. but then, you know, of course, the October 1 photo, September 30 photo is the butler from Clue. And then the October 1 photo is Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
What did you say his name was?
The butler.
What was your guess?
Wordsworth, I think.
You're so close. It's Wadsworth.
Wadsworth. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I was on the right track. It's been a minute since I've seen that. So that I think I did pretty well there.
Better than I would have done.
It wouldn't have given me credit on Jeopardy, but, you know, it's fine. And, of course, then me saying that would have sparked the memory of one of the other people. And then I would have lost the Daily Double and... It would have all been ignominy. You know, Ken Jennings would be scowling at me from across the podium on the Alex Trebek stage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be a whole thing. wow, we're going off on a tangent. Let's get back onto track. One of the things we wanted to talk about, this thing that's been in the entertainment news this week.
Revolutionary.
Well, sure. Whether that's a good thing or not, maybe another question. So there's this company, I believe it's called Sequoia. It's a name that sounds like something Elon Musk would have named one of his kids, whatever it is, which is kind of fitting because it is an AI talent studio. Now, that may seem like an oxymoronic statement to you right off the bat. It certainly does to me. AI is, you know, a bunch of numbers and algorithms and stuff that's all been, you know, put together into something. I don't think there's any actual creativity in generative AI. I think there can be creative uses of AI when you're talking about using AI to automate tasks that, you know, an artist is molding. But when you're talking about just what the studio has done is it's created an AI actress that they've named this program Tilly Norwood. And I use that word intentionally because this is not an actual person. This is not an actress. This is not somebody that is trained and honed a talent. This is a computer program. And they've taken it out to the talent agencies and trying to get the talent agencies to sign this program to possibly represent this program to appear in movies and television. As you might imagine, that is rather controversial. There are a lot of actual human actors and actresses that do not like the idea of this.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to pay a computer program what you have to pay an actual actor or actress. you know, a computer program does not have to spend, you know, years and decades honing their craft to become, you know, the talented individual that we see in a movie or in a TV show or on stage or, you know, performing a song, whatever, you know, you would expect a talented individual to do. They certainly can't create anything. And I just, this whole idea, I'm kind of on the side of the actors here. This leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And
it's reprehensible. And in this little skit, quote unquote skit that they released, which is kind of just like a satirical trailer announcing the announcement or announcing the reveal of this new actress, they say something like, "She'll do whatever I want." And it's just, it's so exploitative in nature. For one thing, this girl is an amalgam of what looks like Brett Cooper, that female Ben Shapiro girl, and then maybe some Sarah Hyland and some Olivia Rodrigo. Like, she's a composite of actual people's faces. She doesn't have any rights. Like, there's no consent involved with this creation. It's disgusting, but part of me wants to ask, and maybe it's me being hopelessly optimistic, but is this entire thing just a big troll?
I mean, I don't think that companies like X24 times 3 to the fourth power or whatever it's called invest that kind of money into trolling.
It's disgusting.
I mean, I might be wrong. It's entirely possible I could be wrong, but I just don't see that. You know, there's only a couple of people in the world that put that kind of money into trolling, and they certainly aren't taking that out and trying to sell it to Hollywood studios. They may be trying to sell it to a gullible public, but that's another story. A number of actors of actual, you know, human talented actors have really, you know, come out very, very strongly in opposition to this, and to the extent that they're saying they want the names of the agency, because the report is that several talent agencies were possibly interested in signing this program for representation.
We want names.
Yeah, they want, there's a hunt on here. They want names. They want any agent that would be somebody that would have that conversation, they don't want to work with.
Absolutely. And it should be blacklisted.
I kind of get that. And, you know, among the people that have come out against this, Melissa Barrera, who of course we know from the Scream movies and a number of other things, great young actress that Jeremy, you and I have championed quite a bit on this show.
Kelly Norwood would have never opened her mouth and had an opinion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and there you go. That's exactly the kind of thing.
Yeah.
Lucas Gage is another, and one with Pensacola connections, Kiersey Clemons, who you may have seen a number of things, maybe most notably as Iris in The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pensacola native. She's one of the people that has come out and spoken out against this too, and you know, very, very literally, you know, they're saying we want names, and that was, in fact, Kiersey Clemons was the one that said that in so many words, out the agents, I want names. What do you think about that side of it? Like, is it, if you, from an agent standpoint, is it a responsible choice on the part of an agent to possibly look at what the next horizon is,
agents, managers, so many people in that space. And hey, I know this might be a controversial take depending on who you know and associate with, but it's a very predatory industry, and the type of people who can exploit and gain off of figures like this are not seen as typically being the most ethical people or the most creative people in the industry anyway. So this is like not a shocker to me at all. The future is what we allow the future to be. So like, if we firmly establish that this is not okay, then maybe people quit FAFOing.
It's just, you know, it's just one more step towards Skynet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere Sarah Connor is frowning at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, let's keep creativity for real people. Let's use automation to do the things that we don't want to do. You know, not the things that, you know, enrich us. That's what I think anyway. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got our co-host, Jeremy Branch, on the line with us. Man, if that song doesn't make you want to sing along, we can't be friends. I'm just sorry.
First concert I ever went to was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Oh, yeah? Really?
No.
Nice, nice. I got to see them at the Hangout Music Festival. So that obviously fairly late in their career, because, of course, you know, we lost Tom Petty in 2017.
What an incredible career that guy had.
Oh, man. I'm a massive fan. Just, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the guy could do no wrong. And,
yep.
And you know, kind of exhibited once again, even though that song has been, you know, very famously used as a needle drop in a previous movie to the one that we're going to talk about. That, of course, being The Silence of the Lambs. Very, you know, very well and iconically used. Thankfully, it has not become one of those songs that has been, like, overused. But it is used again.
It's no Sabotage.
Yeah. Or Don't Stop Me Now, or Sympathy for the Devil, or
yeah.
Gimme Shelter,
yeah.
Or Layla, or, you know, I mean, there's any number of the ones that we could name. It is used once again as the final song when the credits come up in the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie, One Battle After Another, which has been out for just about a week now. So we're going to get into talking about this one a little bit. This is going to be, I think, a very controversial film for a lot of people. It is definitely a political film, although I think it's interesting that I think that this film does show a lot of hypocrisy and negativity towards both sides, even though I think it leans towards one side being, I guess, more just than another.
Yeah.
Is maybe the fair way to say it. But it definitely exposes that there are hypocrites and liars on both sides.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's being lost in the shuffle here. I've seen a lot of stories in the last week about how this movie is very much overperforming on the coasts and in the cities, and doing, I guess, underperforming in the more rural areas, the more red state areas. And I think that's because maybe what some people are assuming the politics of this movie are, and to some extent that's maybe correct, but again, not realizing that it is a little bit more nuanced than maybe they
might expect. I agree with you. I think what's not as vague is the things that it depicts. And in this era of media literacy kind of tanking, I don't think the takeaway that a lot of people are going to have at first glance is the same takeaway that I have and that you just now stated, and that is that it is very critical of certain movements. And I found that to add a little bit of extra, like, depth and nuance to the conversation. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
That's true, but we'll go ahead and put up some spoiler warnings here. If you have not seen One Battle After Another yet, and I would highly recommend that you do. It is one of, in my opinion, one of the best movies of the year, if not the best movie of the year. Mm-hmm. This is one we're going to hear about during the Oscar conversation for sure. One other thing I want to mention before we get into the meat of talking about this movie is, I got to take a little bit of a hat off to Warner Brothers here. You know, Jeremy and I think, have bashed a lot of decisions that have come out of Warner Brothers over the past few years. We haven't been overly thrilled with the way this historic studio has been run by David Zaslav since they merged with Discovery. And this movie is one of a couple that came out this year that are very much a reactions to some of the early missteps that the studio made under David Zaslav. So we all remember during the COVID-19 pandemic, theaters started shutting down. They eventually started reopening, but a lot of people weren't going. And Warner Brothers came up with this strategy that might have seemed like a good idea at the time, to release movies day and date to theaters and on, was it HBO Max or Max at the time? It's changed names so many times that who can tell. But
I think it was Max at the time, but who knows?
Whatever the streaming service happened to be called that day, they were releasing movies day and date. And we saw a lot of movies come out and significantly underperform at the theater because people could watch them at home. And that really irked a lot of the creative community. You know, a lot of these directors feel like they're making movies to be seen on the big screen.
Kelly wouldn't have been mad about it.
And it, you know, it resulted in so many words, them losing possibly the greatest working director that we have these days, a little guy named Christopher Nolan, who had done a great number of movies and had this long-running relationship with Warner Brothers. And he said, oh, yeah, well, I'm done with you. And he took his toys over to another studio, happened to be Universal, and went out and made a movie called Oppenheimer and won every Oscar there is. And so Warner Brothers realized they had to fix their relationship with the creative community. So in doing so, they've taken some really big swings. They've put a lot of money behind some visionary directors who maybe aren't necessarily the best commercial bets in the world.
Like this movie.
This movie is one of them. Sinners, which came out earlier this year, which as you, if you listen to the show, you know, Jeremy and I really, really love. Great, great film. But it's a film that, you know, was in both of these original IPs, not based on a book, not based on, you know, a comic book, or it's not a legacy sequel or a requel or a reboot or anything like that. It's original stuff. And they've put some big money behind them, and they've put some big marketing muscle behind them, and they're taking these big swings. Certainly paid off with Sinners. I think it's fair to say Sinners did very well financially as well as creatively. It's a movie that we're going to be talking about more as the year goes on and we get into the award season. And now we've got this film, which, again, opened at number one at the box office. So a good start, although it's kind of a lowish number one, $30 million range. And this movie's got to make a whole lot more money if it's going to break even.
It's not going to happen.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think that this is one that, if they play it right, can play like the slow burn where it lasts in theaters for a while, then we start getting into award season and people start going to see it again.
And if it doesn't, I don't think it matters because it is so critically acclaimed. The fact that they put $130 to $175 million into the budget of this is pretty wild, especially considering how divisive times are. However, I think that it has earned so much goodwill within the community that you were just talking about, and that is like giving filmmakers faith in Warner Brothers again, that it's probably worth it on the heels of Minecraft and all these other huge commercial successes they've had.
Yeah, I mean, Warner Brothers has had a very good year commercially.
Period. Amazing.
You know, not just Minecraft and Superman. And most of these movies, I mean, Superman got very good reviews too. You know, it's Minecraft didn't get so many good reviews, but they don't care because they're drowning in money from it.
Right.
You know, so there's been a good balance there, which is what a good studio should do. So, you know, hats off to Warner Brothers for taking some chances, taking some big swings, yeah. And I think really paying off, because I do think this is a film that we're going to see discussed ad nauseum for the next 3, 4, 5 months leading into the Oscars. And I think it's a film that has the potential to win a lot of Oscars and maybe finally gets Paul Thomas Anderson his Best Picture Oscar. Maybe finally gets him a Best Director Oscar. It's, you know, remains to be seen what else is going to come out. I know there's a lot of buzz around Chloe Zhao's Hamnet, which is going to be is starting to play the festivals right now. But this is a movie that's going to be in the conversation. It's going to be in the conversation because it's controversial. So again, to put up the spoiler warning, you know, this is a movie about a group of revolutionaries that are rebelling against basically ICE. And basically the detention and deportation policies that are going on in this country right now. Although this feels kind of like a near future kind of situation.
Which is interesting because the book that it's based on took place in like 1965 and then 1980. And I think through that lens, the idea of radical leftist revolutionary action carries a lot more weight and makes a lot more sense. So I'm not necessarily wild about the fact that they changed the time frame, because I feel like now it is so tied up in contemporary politics. While it is very, very topical, and I appreciate it because it's confrontational in that way, I think that little bit of separation maybe would have allowed people to view it more from where it's coming from instead of where they're projecting that it's coming from.
Well, that being said, there obviously has to be some time passage in this movie, because when at the start of this movie, it starts out with these revolutionaries played by Leonardo DiCaprio and Tiana Paris. And over the course of the film, they start out on their campaign. They have an encounter with this ICE commander played by Sean Penn. Stephen Lockjaw is the character's name.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tiana Taylor, by the way, not Tiana Paris.
Tiana Taylor, I'm sorry. You're right, of course. There's enough time for Tiana's character to get pregnant, have a child, and then that child ages to 16 years old before the end of the mm-hmm. movie. So definitely some time passage. You could maybe say the beginning takes place present day, and as the film progresses, we go into the near future. You know, you can use your judgment here where it's going. But we're running out of time with this short show this week, unfortunately. But I got to say, just incredible performances. And really the standout here is the young actress who plays the daughter, Chase Infinity. Her first film, this woman's got a career ahead of her.
Yeah, big time.
Anything else you want to quickly say about the film, Jeremy, before we have to hand it over to football?
I don't want to like let it run over, but I do want to recommend that people go out and check it out. You pull all of the current politics out of it, and what you're left with is just an incredibly well-paced, tight, directorial effort from one of the best filmmakers working.
Agreed. We will be back next week with a full-length show. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.